Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. It is Friday, November 8th, 2019, and we're back with a very fun edition of the show featuring someone I think you're going to be hearing a lot about in the MMA media space for years and years and years to come. That's if he doesn't get recruited elsewhere. Some other sport, Michael Fidel of the Bodylock MMA. He is a MMA journalist and also the deputy editor there and does some writing as well for Flow Combat. And I kind of, Michael, as you'll hear about the interview, got on my radar, hearing him through other media members, Ariel Helwani and Luke Thomas specifically, and kind of liked his work and what he was up to. And he's a journalism major, which is good, and getting involved in all that. So, of course, that makes me feel warm inside. So in this conversation, we talk a little about his, kind of what he's been up to and how he has come to be in this space and some of the work he's been doing. We talk about this past weekend's UFC 244, UFC Moscow coming up as well. It's a fun conversation, just under an hour, and it's really good, really good. My intro aside, I'll warn you a couple of things. My intro sucked, and early on we just had to have him adjust his microphone because it was rubbing up against his beard a little bit. So if you hear a little bit of that early, it stops after a couple of minutes or so. Yeah, I want to take you inside, the production of the show and how these things work. Very professional outfit that we run here at WrestlingObserver.com. Without further ado, let's get right to it. Michael Fidel of the Bodylock MMA and yours truly talking all things UFC and a couple other things too. Enjoy. Well, anyone that's listened to this podcast before knows that I am my heart goes pitter-patter when I hear about journalists, actual journalists, people that are interested in journalism, going to school for it, and all that good stuff, and especially those that are into MMA. It's a good combo. Not a lot of us out there. So when I've heard about my guest this week from several different people, and I had to reach out to him, and then I saw that he is back in April earlier this year, received a scholarship for sports journalism at the one and only Vanderbilt University. I had to get him on the show. Michael Fidel of the Bodylock MMA. And this is Twitter handle or this website that he's built and created, and big part of deputy editor there, and also with staff writer at Flow Combat and all that good stuff. Michael, I kind of butchered my open there, kind of stumbling over myself. I get so excited when I talk to people that are into journalism. So welcome to the show for the first time. And how's it going on this Wednesday night?
Well, thank you very much for the incredible introduction. It may have been a little bit tougher out of the stumbling block, but that's what happens. It's a podcast. These things happen. And, I'm great to be here. I'm sure I'll have my own little gaffes here and there. So as long as we don't hold it against you, we can't hold it against me. Is that right?
That's very true. It's very true. I get nervous around celebrities, you see, even though after all these years. What's the, let me ask you this. Have you ever been starstruck around celebrity? And if so, who?
Oh, I have been starstruck almost every single time I do any kind of work in the media space. I've interviewed several fighters over the years. I've spoken to media members like yourself. And every time I get on the phone or I meet someone in person who I've interacted with or even seen on social media, be it on Twitter or in the actual media itself, like an article about a fighter, I get so nervous and so anxious because it's finally my turn to interact with someone who I've been seeing do such great work, or I've been seeing fight in the cage or promote fights. And I get so worked up over it because it's a live conversation. You never know how things are going to play out. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I've learned time and time again on the media side, fighters, even those who are involved with MMA in auxiliary ways, people in this sport, by and large, are great. And they always put you at ease when you get on the phone. So that's great. So to answer the question, I get starstruck quite a lot, but I could say perhaps I've been the most starstruck when I met Yoel Romero at the American Top Team / UFC Media Day they did a few months back, because that man is gigantic, and it is very scary to stand next to him.
So your story, when you were talking, made me think of my covering my first big UFC event, which was UFC 118, which was in Boston, Massachusetts. This was back in 2012, if I'm remembering the dates right. And this was the BJ Penn versus Frank Yeager 2, and right. as well as the one and only Randy Couture, James Toney fight. And so when my first, so that was my first big one. I covered a UFC fight night in Charlotte. I did it kind of as a practice run. I flew myself down to Charlotte, stayed with some friends in there and covered Takanori Gomi's UFC debut against Kenny Florian a long time ago at the Bojangles Coliseum. But anyway, so I'm going, and this was UFC's, it was their, it was the first MMA event in the state of Massachusetts. And so I go the first media day. Of course, they have this fan expo going on. This is like a big thing. And I walk in. I walk into the like the media day. It was kind of like this, open workouts rather. Mm-hmm. And I saw all these people. I'd kind of interact with a little bit online. Errol Helwani was there. Jeremy Botter was there. A bunch of other people. And I almost had kind of like a panic attack type thing. I had to like go to the bathroom right. for a second and like just kind of like collect myself. And I've covered for this part. I had like covered. So many different, you know, hockey games, basketball games, things like that, just in my college career, and just covered so many college sports and whatever. And I don't know what it was. I think I just kind of let the moment kind of get to me a bit, like, holy shit, you're finally here after all this time, like, you know, writing at 2 a.m. in the morning and talking to this person. And so you made me think of that, telling your story. And now it's kind of like, you know, I go to events and, you know, it's whatever it is, but you kind of, it was, the situation where you kind of build it up in your mind and it's kind of the moment kind of hits you can be the same thing as being celebrities, I guess.
Oh, 100%.
So tell me a little bit about, let me tell the story. The first time I had heard of you, I think I'd seen some things retweeted from Luke Thomas, who I'm a huge fan of and admirer of and of his work. He had mentioned you before. And one of the things that Luke always says, you know, when he talks in his live chats and other things, we talks about advice that people ask him, how do I get in and so on. He's just like, you have to be different and you have to do things that stand out, things that are different than other people are doing. You can't just do the same old fight recap stuff and so on and so forth. And you had done some work. I don't know if it was, on the wrestling front or something that really stood out to him. And I'd seen him kind of mention you a few times, retweet some stuff. And then Ariel Helwani, I believe it was in October, had mentioned you as well. And it was just kind of one of those things like, wow, I've heard this name and this website here and then here. And here we are on Skype. So I guess, how did you get into the game and kind of talk about the body lock and how it's different and how you're trying to do things a little bit differently there?
Absolutely. So I actually got into MMA very late in the game. I saw my first UFC fight that I can remember on UFC 193, December of 2015, which was obviously McGregor versus Jose Aldo. A friend of mine was a very big McGregor fan. Some might say he was the stereotypical McGregor fan. And he was very sold on McGregor's talk it like you talk it, walk it like you walk it, kind of like aura, so to speak. So he invites me over for the fights. We actually had gotten back from dinner pretty late. So we saw the Rockhold versus Weidman title fight, which I was not necessarily appalled by the stoppage, but just stunned mm-hmm. that kind of brutality was commonplace in the sport. And then obviously with the 13-second knockout, although I think McGregor might argue now that it was 12 seconds, I was just immediately hooked on the sport. It seems so different to me from everything because, you know, like a lot of people who are MMA fans, I was a fan of football, basketball, baseball. And I did say was, I am still, but sorry about that. It was just so interesting to me the way that fighting worked. I mean, it's cliched, but it's this primitive form of combat where you have no one to fall back on. There's no, oh, we should have run the ball at the 1 yard line instead of throwing it in the Super Bowl. There's no, oh, so-and-so didn't box out for the rebound. It all comes down to you and your actions. And it really hooked me. So I started going deeper, watching first the pay-per-views, then the fight nights, then branching out to Bellator, to Ryzen, and to all these different promotions, going down YouTube rabbit holes of highlight reels and documentaries like The Smashing Machine. and just getting so invested into the stories of these fighters. And at the same time, I had a passion for writing. I love to do it. I think it's a great way to kind of put your thoughts down on paper, which obviously I know it is, but to kind of articulate your own opinions, not only for someone else, but also for yourself, to put your thoughts in a linear kind of pattern. And so I reached out to Nolan King, who at the time I only knew as MMA Kings on Twitter, because he was the guy who posted all the fight announcements and the recaps so you could follow the sport just by going over his Twitter feed. And he had said that the now defunct MMA Today site was looking for people to come in and pitch in and write. So I started writing there, fell in love with the writing aspect of the sport, continued to fall in love with the sport while I was writing, moved over to MMA Sucka as well, then found The Body Lock thanks to the site's founder and director, Jake Nichols, where I currently am writing and editing, and then recently joined Flow Combat there as a kind of regional writer and content focused person over there. And I really just love writing about the sport. I love the outlets that I write for and the stories they allow me to pursue. But more than anything, it's about kind of giving the people in MMA who don't have a voice, but also covering the sport for fans so that people know what's going on, not only with who wins what fight, but the context that surrounds those fights.
Gotcha. And the so you were a undergrad at Vanderbilt?
Yes, I'm a freshman currently, but hopefully I'll be able to make it through.
And you got a, and you had the Russell Rice Scholarship for sports journalism as well. Did you do any type of writing in high school or anything like that, or is it basically what you just explained? Is that your first run through it?
I never wrote for like a student publication in high school because there was a very limited appetite for mixed martial arts at the school I attended. But which is a shame because, like we were talking about, you can open the doors to so many different unique stories and personalities and different cultures through MMA. But I wrote predominantly remotely for these MMA sites, and that's what allowed me to apply for that scholarship. Yes.
Got it. And is your microphone rubbing up against something?
It might be
like your face. Yes. Just a little bit. Okay. That's awesome. The same thing happens to me. I just picking up just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that better?
All good. All good. Cool. So yeah. So I, like I said at the top, journalism, I mean, I was a journalism major, way back in the day. And I mean, that's what I just grew up like in an era that, you know, today how you know the media is perceived is a lot different than it was, you know, when I was coming up. And but I tell you what, I would never I never trade in that journalism degree or what I learned covering other sports, covering other beats, all that type of stuff for anything, to provide that foundation that when I finally got to cover UFC shows, I took the same approach as I did when I would cover basketball games and hockey games. And I went to a Division I college, so you know, these bigger events, and I got to kind of cut my teeth early on, learn that stuff, and it definitely helped me out. Definitely helped me out later on. It's to me, I mean, having that degree and just having that sense was so important. It's crazy now because these days, you know, so many people, obviously they get the opportunity to write for various websites and so on, and you don't really need much of a background, as we were just talking about earlier. But I think sometimes that can hurt, is that people don't really want to go to that extra level, or maybe they're after college or something like that. But it's, to me, it was just, I was able to learn so much just by learning how to interview right and taking and having good editors and people that would talk to me about stuff. Here's what you do better, or do this or ask this. That stuff was so key later on. And to me, that helped kind of put me a little bit ahead of the game, you know, as more actively writing and things like that. So yeah, congratulations on the scholarship. And thanks for keeping the light of sports journalism alive.
Well, thank you very much. And hopefully we can continue to do that.
That sounds good. Was it, did it kind of blow your mind when Luke and then Ariel mentioned you on their respective shows?
Oh, it was absolutely ridiculous. What had actually happened was I was with a couple of friends, and I get a text from one of the writers at The Body Lock who says, "Hey, Luke Thomas just shouted out the site." And I wrote back, I was like, "Okay, like, very funny. Thank you very much. That that's great. Like, I got a good laugh out of that. I appreciate the sarcasm. And he goes, no, I'm very serious. And he sends me a timestamp. And I listened to it. And sure enough, there it was. And for me, that was one of the best moments of my career to date. Because like you were saying earlier, Luke is someone in MMA media who, whether or not you agree with everything he says or whether or not you're a fan of his, in terms of Twitter, I know there's a lot of resentment there, but he is without a doubt one of the most sound names of journalism within MMA, even though he doesn't consider himself a journalist. Right. The way that he's able to hold media members, fighters, promoters accountable, and the fact that he doesn't shy away from doing so is really admirable for writers who are coming up like myself. And also, I think, to the majority of people. I don't think any of the people who might take issue with Luke for whatever reason, maybe they were blocked on Twitter for an argument that they had or something along those lines. I don't think you could find a single one of them who wouldn't point to his record on speaking truth to power or holding those in power accountable and say that he couldn't do that or he doesn't do that. So for Luke to shout out our work on the show was really one of those moments where you kind of like step back with your mouth agape and you're like, whoa, that just happened. And then obviously with the Ariel shout out recently, there's only so much you can say about Ariel Helwani that hasn't been said. I mean, he is the pinnacle as far as MMA media goes. He's got a show that has become bigger than its guests in some ways, where you have fighters begging and pleading to come on Ariel's show because of how influential and how massive the show has become. He's at ESPN, appearing on SportsCenter, interviewing the biggest names in the sport to a degree that we really don't see elsewhere. So for those two guys who in their own ways are such like powerful forces in media and such peaks of the mountains, so to speak, it was really humbling and really encouraging to hear those.
So UFC 244 this past weekend. Have you been following any of this DAZN and the Canelo delay in the fight and all that stuff? Have you been following any of this?
I've been following it kind of on the periphery. I'm not a big boxing guy. Obviously, yeah. I love to watch boxing, but I don't follow it to nearly the extent I do MMA.
So,
but yes, I've been following the start time debacle you're talking about.
Yeah, this is such a it's a thing that's kind of fascinating to me because we cover a lot of the business of the sport on our website. Most pro wrestling and MMA and to a lighter extent boxing. I'm similar to you. I grew up in really liking boxing because there really was no MMA at that time. And then just because the sport just became kind of isolated itself and what have you, and eventually found MMA and really liked that. But it's fascinating because you hear Dana White talk about at the press conference afterwards how everything kind of happened, and the fact that it really just kind of made 244 seem a little bit bigger. It pissed the boxing people off to no end. I mean, my Twitter timeline was just full of just people that were just so angry at this thing. And UFC, I mean, UFC would never do that. And they've gone up against other, big boxing shows before and what have you. But they would never say, we're going to delay, the main event, say with the situation was reversed. We're not going to delay Masvidal and Diaz. And initially, I was really going into it. I was like, this is actually pretty cool of DAZN to do that, to acknowledge that there is another fight happening. A lot of people are going to watch. How do we get the best of both worlds? And then kind of the execution of it, as it just kind of kept getting long, the delay kept getting longer and longer, and the main event didn't start until 1:15 a.m.
Right.
East Coast time. I can see why people would be really just kind of like, what are you doing with all this stuff? So I was just curious if just kind of what your take was on that, kind of some of the anger the anger and frustration from people afterward.
Yeah, absolutely. I like you, I completely agree with the premise that both DAZN and the UFC had with staggering the start times. I think it's great, and it worked out really well for me because I was able to see both main events without having to split screen or set up a different way of watching the fight on a different screen. So in that sense, it was great. I think it was probably good for DAZN in the sense that they were able to get those carryover viewers from the Diaz-Masvidal fight in UFC 224 who then went to DAZN to watch boxing. Now, I don't have any kind of sourcing on that. I believe The Athletic spoke to a DAZN official who said that was the case, that 100,000 additional subscribers signed in to watch the main event of the boxing fight following UFC 224 or 244, excuse me. But I don't have any kind of outside sourcing there, so I would take that with a grain of salt. But I think the only issue with that would be the fans in the arena for the Canelo fight, because they had to sit through. How long did the delay end up resulting?
I think it was like an hour 15.
Right, sitting an hour 15 for the event that you wanted to see, to watch something that you deliberately chose not to watch by being in attendance.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a little, that's tough. But if I was in the crowd, I know I would have been okay with it. But I can't speak for the rest of the crowd, because clearly they put the boxing match ahead of the UFC on their priorities list, and they had that flipped.
Yeah, and so even though they had, you know, Diaz Masvidal playing in the arena, the MGM Grand was able to negotiate that on that night with Dana White. You know, a lot of boxing fans just hate MMA, so it's like they could be like
the little rivalry.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, I don't really want to. You can. It's great they put it up there, but I don't know what percentage of the fans actually cared. But the 244 itself. You know, we're a couple of days past it. It feels like it's been like weeks for some reason. Like,
it really does.
So long ago. It was overall, I thought the show was great. It was one of those that I think, from, you know, when you go into these big, the really big shows, the one that we know really the big shows, when they, you look up and down the card and there's interesting fights on every single level of the show. And when they pay off, for the most part, it's like, it's just such a great feeling, right? It's just, you feel like you got your money's worth, your time was well spent. And that things, results actually mean something, and there's advancement and so on. You know, obviously let me ask you, what were some of your big takeaways coming out of it? What's kind of stayed in your mind a couple of days out?
Well, not that these are any kind of unique takes, because I've seen articles written, videos made about these, but the reemergence of Darren Till and Kevin Lee, the whole don't write us off yet kind of performances that they put out. I mean, for Till, he jumped up a weight class and is immediately in title contention. And for Kevin Lee, he just took out one of the fighters who a lot of people thought was the next big thing in the division. And obviously, they went on respective growth patterns following the fight. Till, with his revelations about being scared to fight and how he had to overcome that, which a lot of people resonated with. And Kevin Lee, using it as a kind of political statement on Instagram, where he juxtaposed his views with Gillespie's in the caption. But obviously, the main event, coming away from the main event, there are so many storylines to go into with that. I think maybe the fact that we now have our next title challenger at women's 125 with Chookagian, but those are just a few of the storylines that come to mind as takeaways following the event.
Yeah, so we'll start from the top. I don't have this feeling we're going to see Masvidal Diaz anytime soon, and I said that immediately after the fight. And I think the way that Masvidal kind of put it on for those first three rounds, and it, to me, it was disappointing. I think everyone to see it go on. I know there's, you know, a lot of people saying, yeah, the fight should have been stopped. It's kind of this debatable thing to me, because you do see cuts like that in other arenas and what have you. So I think it's just a personal preference thing, what have you. But I think, you know, I don't really have any desire to see it right away. Really, I just, my immediate thought, and people know, if there's just a bad decision or a stoppage, where you're just like, I need to see this thing play out again. And for me, that wasn't my immediate thought. My immediate thought was, I think Masvidal, I want to see him against the winner of Usman versus Covington. If everything works out right, I didn't necessarily think, you know, I want to see Conor McGregor fight him or anything like that. To me, I want to see him get that title shot, because I think this is how you build up contenders. You build them up to face the champion and kind of get this payoff. And, you know, for whatever reason, Covington's shot at the title has just taken forever to get there. And obviously we'll see what happens. If they're controversial, you know, ending that fight or something like that, they may run that back depending on the type of business it does. But, you know, to me, Masvidal, and this has been like, for a guy that used to just be decision after split decision after split decision after split decision. Always just seemed to be just like throwing his arms up, like, I don't understand what I can do. This year has been such a revelation, such a change, and so unexpected in a lot of ways. And this is like, it's a good reminder. His 2019 is a good reminder that, you know, if you kind of float around long enough, that eventually if you things might change for you in an instant. And now this guy is like made enough money probably now where he's set for life, if you know, or, you know, he's made himself such a name and such a I'd say a pop culture figure, but he's known by the ESPN types now and things like that. Right. They've really kind of helped. It's one of the big things of the ESPN relationship. It's helped kind of amplify guys like Masvidal out. He's a made man now. He can make, he'll be able to main event, I mean, ESPN shows, you know, yep. Say he has a downturn in the next year, he'll still be, you can still run him out there and main event some shows for the next like 2 years, I think. So, mm-hmm. And who knows, you know, he could get in there and become a champion, what have you. But that was my big thing, is really just this. I don't need to see the fight again, but I want to see him fight a fight that really matters next. And my assumption is that's going to be for a title.
Right. I don't think there's anyone who would argue necessarily with Masvidal getting a title. I mean, he's looked sensational his last, what, three performances? And like you said, I mean, I definitely agree about the ESPN amplifier point. That's, I think, what a lot of people hoped the ESPN deal would do for fighters, to put them on a platform where more and more people would be exposed to them and they'd be able to kind of showcase their personalities. I mean, he was doing morning shows, radio shows, and you really got this feeling that Masvidal was turning into a star right before our eyes. And it feels good, because Masvidal is one of those guys who, he's been around. He's had the highs, he's had the lows. He's kind of rebuilt himself. I know his go-to hashtag on Twitter is the resurrection, and it really does feel like that. It feels like it's a rebirth of sorts for Masvidal, and it's manifested itself in all the right ways. I definitely agree that he is now an A-side in almost every fight you can put together with him. And has that kind of drawing power where he can headline cards. If that title fight comes around, that'd be a very interesting one, especially if somehow Covington was able to get the win, because you have that gym rivalry, the friend turns to foe kind of rivalry, like a Liddell Ortiz vibe, if you will, between those two, that could make that fight even bigger.
Yeah, he's got some options, which are good. I think for Diaz, I don't have an immediate thought in my head of who I'd love to see him in there against next, because again, mm-hmm. We had him gone for 3 years. He finally came back and fought twice this year, which is great. You know, I don't know if he wants to really be in that mix. He seems to get fixated on specific things. I think he's going to be fixated on this Masvidal rematch for a while.
Right.
I mean, the Conor fight at some point makes sense, but you know, depending on if this Conor Cerrone thing happens in January, I mean, there's interesting fights out there if they want to try. If ESPN liked what they saw from, you know, the numbers from him main eventing, you know, you could do that again, or you could do a main event with him again if you find the right dance partner. I think it might be a little bit tough, because I think everything just kind of felt perfectly with this Masvidal thing. So I don't know. Was there an immediate guy that you'd like to see him in there with next that would seem to kind of make sense?
There's no one I can think of right now who I walked out of that fight and I said, wow, I need to see Nate Diaz fight this guy next. But, I mean, you brought up some good names already. Now, this is going to get a little bit controversial, but if we were to look past, and I'm not saying that we should by any means, the allegations that have come out in the New York Times and Irish media against Conor McGregor, these sexual assault allegations. They've been explaining graphic detail in the Irish media. The New York Times has reported McGregor's name as the individual who's being investigated, whereas the Irish media cannot because of the privacy laws there. If the UFC was willing to look past those allegations, which it seems like they are, because Audie Otter was on the Helwani show Monday to say that the UFC and McGregor have agreed on a date and an opponent. McGregor has been very vocal about having a date and an opponent in mind, naming Cerrone, Gaethje as possible opponents. If McGregor was allowed to return to the UFC, I think the Diaz fight would be a great one for both guys. Obviously, they fought twice. They're 1-1. There's a lot of, not necessarily bad blood, because I believe they quashed it following the second fight, but there's that, the backstory between those two. And Diaz's star has never been higher, even coming off of a loss. So, well, you could argue that his star was higher during the McGregor saga, but right now his star is, his stock is higher than it has been of late, coming out of the Masvidal fight. He headlined Madison Square Garden. And I believe in that Athletic story on the DAZN start times with Canelo, the DAZN executive or source was quoted as saying the Nate Diaz fans came over, not the Masvidal fans, even though Masvidal had won the fight. So if you see Diaz as this A-side to everyone in the UFC, except for Conor, and you see Conor as the A-side to everyone ever, that's a fight that I think you can make for a pay-per-view. You don't even need to make up a title for it to headline.
Right.
And I think that could be the fight that I'd be most interested in for Diaz, obviously, with the caveat of the allegations that have surfaced against McGregor.
Yeah, and that would, if that was to happen, I mean, I obviously wouldn't be able to happen in January, I'm assuming, obviously because of the cut and all that stuff. And between those two, I'm guessing there'd be a you know, a decently long negotiating period as as is that want to happen. But yeah, that's the tough thing with Diaz, is like you want to put him, you want him against guys that matter, but there's also you want to kind of protect him a little bit, but you also know if he's going to fight, you know, if he's that interested in fighting. Yeah, it's kind of just one of those things where he's tough to book because there's only a certain amount of guys out there. And that third McGregor fight, I think we feel it's going to happen at some point. At this point, I'll just take McGregor against anyone if everything gets cleared up. But yeah, I guess we'll have to, we'll see how that goes with, you were talking about Darren Till earlier. I think that was, you know, that fight was kind of, you know, a disappointment, I think, for a lot of people as far as what they're expecting, a little, not only the most action packed fight, and you were mentioning the, you know, the Darren Till, comments afterwards and what have you. It's, it was good to hear Dana admit that they kind of rushed him a little bit. You know, after that Cerrone win, it was just really kind of just a, they just kept trying to put him in these situations that he just didn't have a chance to mature yet and expect a lot of him. The weight cutting and stuff was a problem. Obviously, I mean, even this past week, getting in late and having visa issues, you can tell that, you know, Dana was a little bit annoyed at that whole situation, that he that essentially saying Darren Till had to come out here and win, not they were going to cut him or anything. But the insinuation was that it would not be good for his future if he did not win on Saturday night. And he did. And you know, Gastelum's very tough, been a nice run, you know, the past, you know, 18 months or so. And with Till, you know, I hope they match him up right correctly, that they kind of give him, they don't necessarily have to give him the top of the division, that just kind of let this learn from the mistakes of the past and kind of help bring him along again. The Gastelum win is obviously nice, but, you know, pair him up smartly, I guess, for his next one out, and don't try to burn this candle out again. I haven't really looked at, you know, rankings for a few names or anything like that, but anyone that stood out to you that you'd like to see him in there him in there with next?
Well, middleweight's in a weird spot right now, because obviously with Adesanya as the new champion, you don't have the kind of longevity. I don't know if you could call it longevity, but when Whittaker was champion, there was that kind of sense of there's a champion at the top and an established pecking order. Now with Whittaker out, and Adesanya is the new champion, there's a kind of weird lull in everything. Paulo Costa's injured. Whittaker was just defeated by the champion and knocked out. Romero's coming off of a loss. Cannonier, the argument is that he's a little too green at the division. Darren Till, ranked 5, just beat Gastelum, but he's one fight in. Do you give him to a guy like an Adesanya yet? There's Hermanson coming off a loss. The 7 would be Gastelum, who Till just fought. 8 is Jacare, who's booked against Blachowicz, I believe, at 205.
Yep.
Then you have Derek Brunson and new entry Edmund Shahbazyan, who looked phenomenal and has remained undefeated. Very young, very talented prospect in that division. So there's not really a name that stands out to me right away for middleweight. I guess you could book a fight between Till and Cannonier to determine the next shot after Paulo Costa gets healthy and fights, or maybe even Romero. If Romero needs a win, that could be a fight for Romero to get a win, or for Till to beat the Boogeyman, Yoel Romero. So there are a couple fights that I think make sense, but there's none that jump off the page at me as the must happen next fight.
Yeah, as you're going through those, in order to kind of buy some time and let things figure out, let Costa heal and what have you, I would be fine with seeing Adesanya Cannonier and then seeing Till and like Jack Hermanson, who you just mentioned. To me, I think that's a
fun fight.
Yeah, it's a relatively, and it doesn't need to be a main event. It could be a co-main. I think that's fine. Not necessarily pay per view, but like, you know, put it the right way. You know, to me that makes sense because in Hermanson he's a tough test. He's fought some tough guys and has kind of had his own nice run in 2019. But I think with Romero, I think that I want to see kind of Till. I want to see him against someone that is I can't say any better. He is like that to me. That's like the ideal guy you want to have him fight somewhere in the middle division, someone that's not a true like. You know, Romero, I just think so highly of him. Such a killer. A guy that's just so physically impressive and just, you know, it's been such a fun fighter, such a controversial fighter. But someone that I want to see, I don't want to say necessarily want to see Till against him next. Maybe if he beats a guy like Hermanson, I could see that. But that's kind of the guy I'm thinking of. Someone like that's, you know, not necessarily known for knocking guys out every single time out. But someone that has been in those main events before, been in some interesting fights, and is also looking to kind of regain his footing as well. So I think that would be a good one. Till Hermanson, like a co-main event, or maybe a third from the top on a bigger pay-per-view or something like that. I'd be totally fine with that. You mentioned Shabazzian, that was another standout performance as well. It was fun because the prelims, it was like a mix of the new guard replacing some of the old guard, and you had some cases like, you know, Vicente Luque not necessarily grabbing the brass ring against a Stephen Thompson, who looked really good in his return. So there was a lot of guys there that, you know, like Shabazzian and the heavyweight who I can't remember how to pronounce his name,
Jair,
that knocked out Andrei Arlovsky, and now he's getting a shot against Alistair Overeem.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know, right? I hope it's not too fast for him, but you know, we've seen this happen before.
It's the Ngannou path.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah. And with who is the other standout? There was the Luque fight, and there was the I'll come back to it in a second. But there was guys that just they had these opportunities. Some were able to kind of push through and show that they are this, you know, this next breed on the show. And then there's some other fighters that still kind of holding on to their spots. I'm trying to think. All right, now I have to look this up. 2C44 main card. Let's see. Is this fight that I am thinking of here? Corey Anderson, Johnny Walker. That was the other one as well. Johnny Walker was kind of like seen as the next big thing. It'd been a while since obviously that shoulder injury, and then coming back and then Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson is an interesting case where, you know, and Dana White mentioned at the press conference, like this is how you make a name for yourself and get yourself people actually caring about you is these type of performances, and that's kind of what they've been looking for. So we'll see. I mean, with John Jones, I don't know who they're going to have for him next. I hope they don't force the Israel Adesanya fight. I don't need to see that fight anytime soon. But Corey Anderson is a case where, you know, you can see him getting a fight, but you can also see him, you know, not get that opportunity. You talk about impressive performances, that back-to-back with Kevin Lee, who you were talking about earlier, and he was just kind of reestablished himself against a guy that was trying to take that next step in Gregor Gillespie. There's a lot of guys holding their spots and not letting these young guys up, you know?
Oh, 100%. I think the Anderson fight was exactly what he needed to do, and he issued an apology for his post-fight celebration, which I can count on my hand the number of times I've even heard that. So it just goes to show he's a great guy. There were a lot of pieces written about him in the lead up to this fight where he's been very upset with the way the UFC has treated him and the way that he feels his accomplishments have not been weighed as far as a meritocracy goes. So for him to get that win is a very big deal. As for who Jones would fight next, I hope they don't do the Adesanya fight. I would love for a champion to defend in their weight class, because I feel like that's slowly becoming less and less mandated. But maybe something along the lines of John Jones waits for the winner of a Corey Anderson, Dominic Reyes, or one of the two, and fights the next one after. Something along those lines. If you had to pick, I'm gonna turn the interview around.
I like it.
If you had to pick between Reyes and Anderson, who would you give it to?
Classic Helwani move. Well done. Well done.
Well, thank you.
Let's see. I would, you know, I guess I would go Reyes next. Mm-hmm. The Anderson win just had a little bit more steam behind it, maybe because a little bit of recency bias, but Weidman is, you know, not really a hot take here. I just think he's washed at this point. I was there, KHI at that fight. I mean, he just got dropped quick, and it was like, you know, over like that. Right. Anderson with Walker, you know, a bigger guy and a guy that's has made some fighters look pretty bad. You know, Anderson really has a momentum. He's a little bit pissed off, which is good. Jones seems to have Jones' attention a little bit more now. I think you could. I think both guys will talk, and I think that's important these days when it comes to trying to build up these Jones fights. But I would be fine with either. You know what? The more I kind of think of it, I think the Anderson fight was, just given who he beat, I think might be in the recency, I think a little bit more of a standout to me. And then with Reyes, I mean, I think Reyes is going to be in this division and doing some big things for a while. But it was, they have two interesting options. It really just comes down to whether Jones is interested in fighting either of them. But he's got to, you know, he's got to fight one of them, right? So at some point. So who would be your preference?
I think I'd lean Anderson for the same reason, strength of schedule, even though Walker and Weidman are, in my mind, kind of similar in the sense of what a win over them means, although for very different reasons. I think that Anderson's been doing it longer at a higher level, so I'd kind of view it as rewarding him with the title shot, especially because if you look at this last performance as a standout one from him, he went above and beyond. He went outside of his comfort zone and did more in this fight than we're typically used to seeing from him from an output standpoint. So I think you throw him a bone, give him the shot, let Reyes either wait for the next or take another fight and continue to hone his skills, because going for John Jones isn't like going for most champions in the UFC, where it's a title fight. It's a guy who's never been beaten and only been in legitimate trouble, twice in his career? So Reyes, although I think he's incredible, I mean, he is a joy to watch, I think he might still have a bit left on that learning curve.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's why I lean a little bit more towards Anderson. I think Reyes... Right. Again, I think he could go in there with another main event, an ESPN main event, with another, you know, top light heavyweight, refine those skills a little bit, get another signature win, and then be like, okay, this is a no doubter. You know, and Anderson, he's relatively fresh, didn't really take any damage in that fight, and he'd be game for it. Again, if he kind of brings that persona out, you know, just this that type of angle, like, I finally got this and plays it right, then, you know, I think you have a very interesting fight in your hand. So we'll see what happens with that. Obviously, it won't be till, you know, first quarter of next year. But coming up on Saturday, we go to Moscow, return to Moscow, Russia, as UFC does an afternoon show there on Saturday with a much different headliner than they originally had. Zabik Magomedsharipov versus Calvin Kattar. Calvin Kattar was supposed to fight in this Boston show that just happened in the co-main event there, but now gets this opportunity to main event because the original main event, Alexander Volkov versus JDS, fell through, and now Greg Hardy, of all people, going up against Alexander Volkov. And, you know, I don't know how much you've got a chance to really kind of look ahead to the show, but this, you know, obviously it's a ton of Russian, you know, fighters and so on. There's a Kind of Ed Herman is randomly on this card as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
And also a Roosevelt Roberts, a prospect that Dana tend to like. I believe he was from Contender Series. Might not be right. He was kind of buried on the ESPN prelims. He's a last second replacement. So there's a couple, you know, interesting, you know, fights on this show when it comes to that. But the top two fights, I am, you know, kind of putting all the you know, the BS with Hardy aside with his past. This is an interesting step up for him. Obviously, that last fight had people kind of frustrated. I will say that seeing it live at cage side, Hardy, especially in the first round, he's very fast for a big guy. And that's right. What, when you see him live, it really stands out. And, you know, he's still a rookie in this game, even though he's had several fights, I believe. So he's fourth fight in the UFC this year. You know, he's still very early in his whole MMA career, not just his UFC career. So there's still things for him to learn. And, you know, he needed cage time, you know, and there's ways you can spin everything. But I didn't, you know, other than obviously the inhaler thing and all that, which is just kind of part of the whole package. I guess I didn't take away as many negatives in that fight as others did, simply because my expectations for Hardy aren't as high maybe as other people. Obviously, he was knocking people out early on. I think that may have changed some things, and people hate him because of the domestic violence stuff in the past, which is completely understandable. But I think if you kind of remove all that, you know, there's something here. And if he catches Volkov, that could be a very interesting fight. Kind of get your thoughts on the Moscow show and any, you know, the top two fights and anything about it that stands out.
Sure. So I love when the UFC does one of these Russia cards, because they load the event with a bunch of talent that the name recognition definitely isn't there for the majority of fans, but these guys can always fight. I mean, I'm looking down this card and there's Roman Kopylov making his MMA his UFC debut, a former FNG middleweight champion and multi-time Sambo champion. He's fighting Carl Roberson, who's one of those powerful kickboxer prospects. His only losses are to Cesar Mutanche and Glover Teixeira, both of them by submission. Magomed Ankalaev, for even though he's got the connection to Chechen warlord and dictator Ramzan Kadyrov, is a very phenomenal talent at light heavyweight. He's fighting Dalcha, and I'm going to butcher this last name, Lungiambula, who is a hulking human being. If you remember his last fight against Townsend, I believe, maybe on the Minneapolis card, but he's like one of these power judo guys, and he's phenomenal to watch. That's a great fight. But back to the top two fights. I get very carried away when I look at cards, especially when it's fighters who aren't as commonly known. With the Volkov-Greg Hardy fight, acknowledging right away the Greg Hardy passed, as you did, because it's impossible not to, where he was found guilty by a judge of several charges stemming from I believe it was several charges, it might have been one, so I apologize if that's inaccurate, stemming from a domestic violence incident. And then when he appealed for a jury trial, he was acquitted from the jury trial. And then obviously subsequently began his MMA career, making it to the UFC, where he was in co-main events and main cards alike, fighting somewhat controversially from the DQ loss and a no contest. On the inhaler issue, I feel like it was more ignorance than anything. I don't believe he was trying to intentionally cheat. I feel that was something that he and his team were not well versed on. And even then, there was some confusion among the commission, USADA, and the UFC as far as how legal or illegal was it. But putting that aside, this is obviously a huge step up in competition for him. He's been fighting guys who the majority of fans either don't know or wouldn't know, like someone like a Dmitry Smolyakov, who was cut from the UFC only to return to fight Hardy and drew the ire of Dana White for his performance. Volkov is a legitimate top five UFC heavyweight, and this is a massive step up. I personally would have rathered it be someone like Cyril Gane. I feel like that would have been a more technical match for Volkov, but obviously Hardy's timeline worked out better, and he asked for the fight, and his management were able to secure it. I feel like, as you said, the big step up might present some problems for Hardy. I'm not as high on Hardy's fighting skills as I think a lot of the fans are. I feel like he still has a ways to go because of how green he is in the sport. But at heavyweight, someone at his size with his power and his athleticism, given his all-pro, Pro Bowl, NFL background, that's going to carry him for a long time, as we've already seen. The question is, how far will it carry him? Will he be able to take out someone like an Alexander Volkov, who is very technical for the heavyweight division and has been in there with some of the best, obviously the TKO of Verdum of late. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out. And then the main event, the 3-round main event, which I am so bummed about because this has 5-round masterpiece written all over it. Zabit, Calvin Kattar. I've actually spoken with Calvin Kattar in the past, as I have with Hardy, but with Kattar, his focus is so centered around boxing in MMA, and he feels like he's so levels above everyone from a boxing perspective. And it's very difficult to doubt him when you look at his performances. He has some of the most technical boxing in the division, which says a lot given how good featherweight traditionally has been. So I think there is going to be a lot of people who are surprised with how good Calvin Kattar is. And I think there might be an upset here with Calvin Kattar boxing up the next big thing, the uber prospect, Zabit. Now, I'm not saying that is an official prediction because, like we said, I tend to stay away from predictions. They're not my cup of tea. I'm not a technical analyst. But I think this fight is a fight of the night, and I am, again, just so bummed that it's not 5 rounds.
Mm. Yeah, I actually didn't realize that until you mentioned yeah. that it was 5. That's too bad.
It's yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully there's no like controversy or anything like that.
I hope it's not someone's up 2-1 or 3-0 and the tide starts to turn right at the end.
Right, exactly. And I could see, you know, with both guys, you look their obviously Sabit's win streak is really great. Kattar's has an outstanding record. His last few years, I could easily see, you know, the winner of this getting a shot at Holloway. Will the winner of Holloway and Volkanovski as possibly, you know, the next title challenger, especially if it's Zabit. Unless, you know, if Volkanovski beats Holloway, I think you obviously have to do an automatic rematch.
Right.
To me,
right. Unless Holloway were to move up and wait.
Exactly. Exactly.
Could be a viable option.
It is. It's very true. Yeah. We could see something change. After December, that December show, by the way, when they showed that lineup, that's a really fun show.
Amazing.
I was mentioning some of the other guys that they, it's amazing. Like you don't often see back to back loaded up pay-per-views like this.
Right.
And it's, it's not super, huge on star power, but there's interesting fights up and down the show. And that's, again, just like the show we saw this past weekend, sometimes that's really all you can ask for. And this is, it's intrigue up and down the show and like, yeah, guys moving up. I'm very excited to talk about that, as we get closer to it, but yeah, it is a, yeah, that should be a lot of fun. But yeah, going back to this, so yeah, I think the top two fights are interesting, and in some of the fighters, it's, you know, great that you gave some insight there. Again, guys like Roosevelt Roberts, interesting to see what he does against Yakolev, who is a tough UFC fighter, as most of them are. And if Roberts is able to get past him, you know, it could be some good things for him as his his 2020 approaches. Yeah, so before I let you go, obviously I want to give you a chance to plug away, different things that you've written that people want should check out, either current stuff or stuff in the past, a combination of both. We'll kick it over to you. The floor is yours.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I mean, this was a great conversation. I really appreciate you having me on. I've been writing a lot. Well, actually, I should rephrase that. I haven't been writing a lot of late with school and some other things going on. But I've been doing my best to kind of find the stories I feel like aren't being reported on and that I feel should be reporting on. So of late, I've written about ONE Championship and their purported drug testing policy. Obviously, with ONE Championship, things aren't as transparent as they are with promotions in the United States are subject to athletic commission oversight. So there were some claims that ONE Championship had made regarding the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. A WADA spokeswoman was able to refute some of the claims that One Championship had implied, which resulted in our article being picked up by the Luke Thomas Show. Recently, we covered Battlefield FC, which is an Asian promotion that did their last show in Macau, China. And Battlefield FC did not pay their fighters. Several fighters from that card have still not been paid, so we reported on that, as well as the referees who decided not to attend the event over fear of non-payment. So the event was actually officiated by referees brought in on a day's notice. That was the controversial Will Brooks Gleison Tibau finish, if you remember that guillotine where they stopped it in many people's eyes prematurely. We recently reported on Ali Abdelaziz and his outsized role on the PFL roster. Obviously, Abdelaziz had a very controversial past with the PFL back when the PFL was World Series of Fighting. He purportedly worked as a matchmaker and executive for the promotion while allegedly working simultaneously as a manager, which would be a clear conflict of interest as he would be representing a fighter and the promotion. There are allegations, many of them have been reported on by veteran investigative journalist Mike Russell, that he was kind of setting up the contracts and setting up the fights so that his own fighters would benefit. And obviously that, while his official role with the promotion was terminated in 2015 following scrutiny by the Nevada State Athletic Commission, he has maintained a very large presence on the roster that has drawn the ire of several other managers and even forced the PFL to reach out to other managers and assure them that they were not playing favorites with Dominance MMA clients. But that report was cited by Ariel Helwani on his show, and that was our most recent report. There is something that we are working on currently with a regional promotion outside of North America that may implicate one of their upcoming promoted shows, but we are still gathering information on that, and hopefully we'll be able to release that in the next week or so.
Great stuff. And I predict, you stick with the books and keep doing your training and all that stuff. But based on this conversation, some of the work already, I think we're going to be hearing a lot from you in the years ahead. Michael Fidel, you can read his work at the Bodylock MMA. And also Flow Combat, you can follow him on Twitter, Michael Fidel, and also follow the Bodylock MMA and Flow Combat on Twitter. Just go to my Twitter when I retweet all this stuff, and you'll be able to follow him. Michael Fidel, thanks so much for joining us, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you for having me. It was a great talk.
All right. Big thanks to Michael Fidel for stopping by. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Follow him on Twitter at, it is Michael Fidel, F-I-E-D-E-L. Very easy to find. Follow my Twitter. And then Josh Nason, J-O-S-H-N-A-S-O-N. And you'll get all that stuff as well. Speaking of Twitter, boy, you make one comment about AEW and a little dig at WWE, and the WWE stands, as the kids call them, came out of the woodwork. Man, I praised AEW, their show, their Dynamite Go Home, the Go Home show, AEW Dynamite, the Go Home show for a Full Gear this weekend. And boy, I tell you what, this was a it's funny. It's absolutely funny. I think I'm actually going to write a column about some of this stuff as well. Kind of the premise being that wrestling, it is okay to like what you like, and it's okay to not like other stuff, but hating it just because you think you have to is kind of weird. It's a really strange time. It's a fun time, but man, there's groups that just get so up in arms about having to defend a side. And maybe, Twitter is a terrible place anyway, but maybe it's just a case of people just really deciding to go all in on a thing just because they feel that they have to. It's kind of the way that politics goes these days. It's kind of like, on any opinion, any stance, any team, anything, it's like you're either with us or you're against us. And to me, that kind of kills the conversation. It kills debates. It kills understanding other sides. There was a lot of furor about, Chris Jericho talking to Donald Trump Jr. on his podcast the other day. I haven't listened to it yet. But if he wants to have him on there talk about a book, then, you know, that's fine. And people can choose just not listen to it. They can delete it, not listen to it, move on with their day. It doesn't mean that, you know, I think so many people assume that the way things go is if you talk to someone, you immediately align with everything that they believe in. And that's not what debate and discussion is all about. And unfortunately, these days, that's kind of been killed off because people that want to have these discussions and understand the other side and so on, they're not allowed to do so. They get shouted down. They get, you know, berated on social media. So, but those are the conversations that kind of educate people and understand, either support opinions or help change opinions. And it's okay to change your mind on things, you know? So I haven't listened to that yet. I did hear, I hear Trump Jr. on another podcast. He was fine. You know what? It was just like, it was 15 minutes and I listened to it and it was like, cool. Okay. I'm not going to buy the book. Whatever. It's just interesting to hear those things because it gets you out of your own bubble. And that's a good thing. Going back to AEW and WWE and NXT, you know, it's okay to like these other sides. And I think it is so weird when people like actively root against a new group like AEW because they're helping out, right? I mean, they're, look at wrestler salaries, look at opportunities, look at just the fun, the industry experiences when there's another competitor. And I understand from the strictly WWE side, people that they feel like that's the only thing they can defend. They're probably sick of seeing their product get shit on all the time. But they, to me, you know, and again, I'm just basically kind of speaking out my column at this point. You know, my expectations for WWE are pretty high, and they're high because they're the industry leader. They always will be because of the money that they have and just the stature they have. You know, AEW can spend the next 10 years trying to catch up, and there's just this institutional just knowledge and feeling with WWE. Now, again, that could change. Who knows? But it's like a fledgling football league starting or something like that. People always have an industry leader first, and then everyone else kind of after that. So same thing with UFC. You know, Bellator will never beat UFC. They just won't. It just won't happen. They may have better fights than them at certain points, may put on better events, maybe a more compelling division, but it's going to be, they'll never beat UFC when it comes to the overall package, especially with mainstream fans, which is really all these groups are looking to get at this point because they have the hardcores. You're looking to keep the hardcores happy. It's everyone else you're trying to bring in and get that buzz going. And with WWE, my expectations are high because they are the industry leader. They have all the money, they have all the creative staff. And so when, you know, they put out stuff like, you know, the Hell in Cell finish, basically all the build leading up to that with, you know, their champion cowering and things like that, to me, it's just not good. And it's a chore to watch a lot of these shows, and it shouldn't be a chore to be entertained. And if it is, then there's a problem. And we think we've seen by the ratings, those are things that clearly a lot of people are like, it's not worth my time. But if WWE is great, everyone else is great too. That, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats analogy, right? And we've seen that in the past. So I think sometimes the WWE people, kind of the super pro WWE people that want to see AEW fail and want to almost like it supports what they're saying. I think it's like this, is that let's see how am I trying to say this as I'm thinking it out. And I appreciate you listening to me, helping me workshopping this column out. As I talk with WWE, it's like the expectations are there because if they are better, everyone else is better too. And I completely lost my train of thought there. These are reasons that it's good to write these things out. But anyway, it's okay for everyone to like everything, and it is okay for multiple companies to exist, and it's okay for multiple organizations to drive each other creatively. And the other thing I saw was this assumption, and basically just this assumption's not the right word, but it's basically just almost an admission or just giving up, saying, well, WWE does not have to promote $60 pay-per-views anymore. They just basically have a $10 a month for the network. They don't have to do this. They don't have to do good go-home shows. And to me, that's the ultimate white flag. Like, if you just come to accept that this is as good as it gets, that's to me pathetic. Like, that's if I was watching Breaking Bad, you know, when it was going through its run and halfway through, they were like, well, you know, the show isn't good, but it's like, well, look, I mean, they've had 3-4 great seasons already. You know, what else are you going to do? They don't have, they're on, you know, it's part of your cable package. It really doesn't have to be that good. Just watch it. You could watch other stuff afterward, you know, whatever. That it's just not how entertainment is. And that's what WWE is supposed to be at the end of the day. So this mentality of just basically accepting it and saying, you know, in that case, you know, I pay $5 a month for ESPN Plus. I should just accept that if UFC does a terrible card, or if Ariel and the bad guy of the show that I watch on there, if the feed kept going halfway through and the audio is bad, it's like, well, you know, it's $5 a month, so you really don't have to try that hard. They don't have to do anything. They already have your money, and they just have to, you know, not do that much. That mentality is just completely false. It's giving up. And I can't, in my mind, like, as far as being a critic, whatever you want to call me in this thing, a fan, I will never, ever think that of WWE or AEW or any other group being like, well, you know, look, they don't have to do this because ultimately, like, what they offer, you know, you have to pay so little for that. It's not worth it. Like, does that mean that, you know, like a fast food restaurant has to give you, turtle meat or, you know, expired meat because they have a 99-cent, burger special or something like that. Like, you get what you pay for. That's, to me, and honestly, I think if you talk to people in WWE, they would say the exact opposite. They would say, well, we can't, that's not our approach, saying, well, we don't have to build to events and have excitement, things like that. Cause look, people are already paying $10 a month. So who cares? I guarantee that's not their mentality. I just think they've kind of lost their way and starts at the top with Vincent Kennedy McMahon. So that was just a complete ramble. I had not planned to actually talk about any of that. And again, I'm going to kind of work this out more in a column, but the point is, with any of this stuff, is you have a lot of choices and you can enjoy. Same with this podcast. I say at the end of all the time, you can choose to listen to our shows. You can listen to our shows. You can do, if ultimately we're not providing what you want, you can leave at any time. But it's our responsibility to try to give the best products that we can, given the, you know, constraints we have with trying to get guests or, you know, all these different types of things, time frames, all that. But it's just a interesting time. But that was my first dalliance in dealing with the hardcore WWE fans who, you know, just accuse. There was a writer also from The Torch that basically just did the same lazy narrative that, you know, our website is co-opted. And that's just, to me, it's just, that's also pathetic as well. I don't know. People can like what they like, and it's okay to highlight good things and drive the industry as a whole to get better. And WWE should be the best at this. They've been doing this for decades. They have the guy that really just helped, the guy that at the end of the day won everything. And they should be better at this. And I think deep down, most of them know that they can be better. But again, it starts at the top with one guy. So until that changes, good luck. Okay. So all that being said, appreciate you staying around for the rambling. Again, thanks to Michael Vidal. Enjoy the fights this weekend. I'm looking forward to the Moscow show and all that as well. I'm also going to catch up on some of the content talking about podcasts. Chris Mannix is going to talk about the DAZN thing. I'm really fascinated by it. Luke Thomas did a video on it you can find on YouTube talking about kind of, was the decision the right one, the wrong one? So interesting stuff out there if you're curious about that side of the business. So again, a lot of choices in your podcast day. I appreciate you spending any time with me or anyone else at all. If you love WWE, Bellator, UFC, LFA, Combate Americas, we didn't even talk about, or whatever you listen to, I appreciate you. Josh Nason, until next time, insert catchphrase here.